Ooh, we're back. Woo! Day later, Buck Short. How is everybody doing? How are you doing, man?
Good, good. Apart from, you know, I was abandoned from recording.
Me and my scheduling conflicts. I apologize to everyone. We're a day late and a buck short. Should have been out Wednesday. It's now Thursday. We were going to do it live, and at the last minute, it kind of got pushed back. My fault. If anybody listens to me on other podcasts, you'll know this is a common issue of mine.
Oh, yeah. Craig was gloating to me about it.
What did he say?
He said, welcome to my world.
Oh, I had every intention of doing it in time, and then life went away. So I apologize, everyone, but I'm guessing you didn't miss us.
No one was bothered. Not a single question.
I do have a valid reason as to why I wasn't able to make the podcast, and that valid reason comes between two hardcovers and 500 pages. It is the Derren Brown book. I went to the live event in the Magic Circle in London to pick up my signed copy of the book, and we can talk about this in today's episode if you want to. I think we're going to have to. It's one of the biggest things to happen in mentalism in the last 10 years, potentially.
The reason that I'm banned from libraries is because I also come between two hardcovers and 500 pages.
Oh, the podcast has started early, I can see.
Sorry. It's good
also
to
why
see
you're banned from schools.
Oh.
School libraries. Okay. I'll show myself out.
<It's> the end. But it was good. It was fun. You had a laugh.
Yeah, it was a great day, man. I drove up with Rich Relish, who we've had on the podcast. He was our very first guest, and I wanted him to be our first. We wanted him to be our first guest because he's such a unknown genius. So normally, like, long car journeys can go one of two ways. It's either awkwardness and just trying to entertain, or it can just be that the journey feels like it goes by like lightning. And it was absolutely the case with Relish. It was just us two talking ideas and magic the whole way, nonstop, and life, you know, but it flew by. It was a really good trip. Came away with a bunch of ideas from him, and he's got some incredible stuff. He also went over his new release called Sequence. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Mate, it's the trick is good, but the method's even better. Yeah. I don't know how much, if anyone hasn't seen, could you explain it? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I can explain the routine.
It is three cards that you can pull out your wallet, and it's meant to be used as a mentalism opener. So it's not like a show-stopping, heart-pounding experience. It's an opener. It's to warm people up. I think that he wanted to kind of stress that when he was talking about marketing it.
And he said that's something he reiterated to me, that this isn't a showstopper cult style, but it's a fun piece. And when I looked at it from that perspective, I was like, oh, this is good. This is very good.
I think it is. It looks like something that is perfect if you're walking up to a table. And if that is the style of mentalism, like the psychological or ESP stuff or anything at all like that, if it's in your wheelhouse, it looks like a solid opener. So it's three cards with I can't remember the exact amount, but there's a lot of sequences on there of ESP symbols. So circle, cross, triangle, waves, square, star, all different sequences of them written down on the three different cards. I believe a participant picks one of the cards and then picks one of the lines. And all of these sequences have an additional symbol at the end to represent that. I'm not too sure. They read out the sequence, and you're able to know which is the symbol that they're thinking of for that line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a nutshell, like you said, there's 10, 60. I think there's like 60 lines in total, split over three double-sided cards. And each line has a sequence exactly of randomized, and they're all different sequences of these ESP symbols. And the final one, the final symbol is separated away, like in an equals column sort of thing. So that, yeah, like you said, they choose a random line. You don't know what it is. They read you out the sequence, and you're able to know from whether, you know, you present it as a memory feat or whatever, what the final symbol is, which is pretty good as the first phase. And then they read off a random sequence off a different card, and you can do it again. But the final time, and this is the sick bit, they can go to any line, any sequence, and they can read out the sequence in any order whatsoever. Mm. And you still know the final symbol. And the two things I love about this is the first thing that you said is that this isn't a showstopper. So many times pieces of magic come out that are designed to be showstoppers that you can't just sit at the pub and perform it without everyone thinking you're trying to be a shaman. You know, sometimes it's just a bit too heavy, some of these things. But this is because this can be presented as like a feat of memory or even just like an interesting game to start off with before it ramps up the impossibility, which is like Rich talked about, like he believes is very important to start small,
yeah,
and then build into it. Otherwise you can't go backwards, sort of thing. That it's the perfect segue if you're not a confident performer. Like, even I think, like, you can just sort of, oh, I've got these cards in the crack, I've tried to memorize them all. And then you're not, then you haven't got to go through that whole awkward thing of, do you want to see a trick? Or I'm going to perform a piece of mind reading on you. And you do, if it's not your thing, then you can segue into that. And then what you all know what it's like. Once you've performed the first phase of any trick, you sort of settle in and you can then be a bit more confident with. Present being more of a presenter. The second thing that I love about it is that the method is, obviously it's not an actual toy, but mentally the method is a bit of a toy. It's so easy, so fun, but it only works if you know how it works, if you know the secret. Super, super, super easy to do, but there's no fucking way they're working it out. It's as simple as that. If they don't know the secret, they cannot work it out.
Yeah, I think there's this inbuilt trust with Relish, because you can tell everything has obviously been worked in his residencies and gigs.
Yeah,
and he wouldn't put something out unless he was in love with it himself.
I did hear not that we very rarely talk about the green monster, but It says so much about the people that frequent that website, the difference between people who perform and the people who don't. And the people who don't perform spend most of their time on the Magic Cafe because there are people coming out with negative comments on it. And exactly like you said, it's the one thing you can guarantee with Rich is that he only puts out stuff that he does that gets good reactions.
Yeah.
As simple as that. Yeah, like you can debate. It's funny, right? The people on the Magic Cafe were saying, like, it was the method was too transparent or something like that. Like, oh, it was just too easy to figure out. It's like, are the people who are making those posts, are they that stupid? Because, like, we know the crosscut force is imperceptible. And that method is far more obvious than this. Again, it's one of those tricks. It's a great piece of magic. It's a great opener. It's a great, like, it's a great piece to do when you're hanging out with someone. If you don't want to go full tilt all in and doing book tests and crazy things, you can just do this and then build up into it. Yeah. Actually, surprisingly, surprised me with how good it is.
Yeah, and I'm a sucker for anything that comes in the form of a little card that I can fit in my wallet. So
yeah, it's brilliant. Three cards. That's all it is. You got a trick which is amazing, and you know me, I'm all about the tricks that can, or the little interesting stuff that can build into a piece of magic or get you into performing magic. Like the whole thing with me is that I never ask someone, do they want to see a trick? I look for ways to be asked to do magic, and this is one of those interesting things. Like I say, have you seen this? I tried, for example, one way I'm probably going to perform it is just to be like, I got these in a cracker the other day. I'm just try to memorize them on a test meet. And then be like, maybe. And once I'm getting some good responses from it, then I actually didn't memorize that. It's a bit of a trick, but I'm reading you. So that's what's giving me the cues, because I can't actually memorize that many sequences. And then what? Yeah, you know, I can go off from there and,
yeah,
you know. But it makes it easy to not just have to dive full tilt into the, I can read your mind. stuff. So that was fun. Anyway, that was the first part of the journey. We drove in, we met up with Christine Grace. So I helped him out with something for a project that he's working on. May have heard of it called Enigma. I don't think you'll know what the trick is, but you'll have heard rumblings about it. It's gonna, you know, I won't say any more about it, but it was just Chris is a super good friend. We've been friends for years, and he needed a bit of help, so I popped in and helped him with something. And then from there, we went to the Magic Circle. And that was cool. It was absolutely heaving, jam-packed, rammed, filled with people. We got there about like 20 past six. It opened at 7. So hung around at like the bar area. But they put like nightclub-style lighting on and super loud music. So you couldn't hear or talk to anyone properly. It was just... I'm not good in crowds anymore. You know, I still can't figure that out properly. So I was really awkward. So anybody that came up and asked for like pictures or autographs or come to say hi, like, I'm so sorry that I was super weirdo. And I was like, hey, how's it going? Just wasn't cool. But then I got the deluxe version. I got like a early access. So I managed to sit closer to the front and, or right close to the front, sat next to Mark Bennett from Smoke and Mirrors in Bristol, who's just a legend. And then we watched the Q&A with Darren Brown, which was absolutely fascinating. I feel like I'm talking a lot, so I'm trying to like find ways to encourage you in this conversation.
I'm sorry, dude. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's
man.
A lot
I'm
of like... me rambling. I feel bad for everyone listening.
No. That's what they're tuning in for. I'm just completely zoned out. Sorry, I wasn't contributing.
No.
Very
I just
much
feel like
there.
I'm being very self-centered. Is the issue?
Well, it's not an issue. It's just a fact.
Well, do you want me to tell you about like what Darren spoke about? Why this was the best I've ever seen him being interviewed and beyond.
No.
All right, cool. Yeah, let's talk about Rubik's Cube.
Go for it, man. Go for it. Please carry on talking.
So he comes out. He's been interviewed by Richard Young, one of the co-hosts of the Magicians podcast, which is, I'm he told like 300 people there, but that's coming back out in October time, I think he said, with in a whole new format. They're having like three different shows with different presenters. Harry DeCruz and Ed Hilsum are doing one where they have to like go off and research old tricks and then do a podcast about it. And then there's another one which is like TV magic by Alex McAleer. He's going over old TV magic shows and he has to do it. And it's all part of the same network. It's called the Magicians Podcast Network or something. It's cool. It's really cool. Sounds amazing. Anyway, Richard Young was great as a host because he got to read the book beforehand. So he read the whole book cover to cover and then took notes and asked questions based on the book, which is so much better than, you know what it's like, man. If you watch somebody interview that doesn't have a clue, they haven't read up on their subject or topic, and go. So he had quotes from the book written down. He had certain particular questions. It was so good, and that's why I made it such a good interview. But the thing that fascinated me the most is that every other time I've seen Darren be interviewed, and like I've seen him at like the Session Convention, I've seen him at the Crypt and the Green in Crickenwell, which is like a private event thing. I think he went out with Penguin eventually. And I seen him at another talk, which may have been another Session Convention, again, or somewhere else. But he was every single time he was so reluctant to talk about methods, obviously, because, you know, his audience is primarily the British public. So, you know, if he was to ever speak about, and I mean, this is a podcast, but I guarantee you, Sandra, who plays the lottery in the local Londis, is not watching this podcast, but there is a chance she would have watched a Darren Brown interview if she, you know, she was a fan. So, you know, I'm not too conscious about saying a lot, but he was basically just a bit more open about his methods, how certain things, you know, like he was on about at one point how he felt uncomfortable doing a switch on stage. Or he didn't feel uncomfortable until somebody else told him it was obvious. And then he, you know, stuff like that. And they asked him about the book, and he said, well, he the last tour he did was the longest tour he's ever done. I think it was like 2 years in total.
Yeah.
And what he normally does is write books while he's on the road. So The title of the book is what is it?
Notes from a Fellow Traveler.
Notes from a Fellow Traveler, but the subheading is, or the subtitle is, Mentalism, Meaning, and 30 Years of Mistakes. And what he said was, you know, he's made so many mistakes that he's learned from over all these years of performing constantly that it was cathartic for him to put them somewhere and hopefully help people, you know, go forward with it. But what was crazy was that, and Richard Young asked this, was he said, so Darren says that in the book, he teaches his process of creativity. Well, the last time sort of Darren put anything out to the public, and just Darren being in the public or the magician's persona, consciousness, so many people emulated him.
Mm.
So many people copied his style. So Richard Young asked, like, does this scare you that you're going to put your process out there and potentially have a new wave of people just trying to be you? And I don't want to get it wrong, but he said when it first started happening, it like made him feel super uncomfortable. He wasn't happy with it, but he's kind of like okay with it now. But what I took away was that, like, oh my gosh, Darren Brown's creative process is in this book. And I'm quite comfortable with my style. Like, I'm not going to emulate Darren Brown, although there's definitely stuff that I do, which is either me subconsciously ripping him off. I think we all kind of do in a way. He just sort of elevated the art. But to see the way his brain works and the way he would approach things, like, for example, he said that in there is his ambitious card routine, or how he would create an ambitious card routine. Mm. And he talks about how it would be for stage. I haven't read that part of the book yet, but it's fascinating to think, like, okay, because, like, obviously, if you've seen the Showman show, the card to box is by far, I think, the best card to box in magic history.
Yeah,
the very fact
we spent about 2 hours talking about it in Birmingham.
Yeah, we did. I honestly, I've never seen a card like. There's some great, just like J.C. Wagner's card to box or card under glass, same realm. James Brown's card to box is absolutely incredible. But what Darren Brown did with it was, it's no longer a card to box. It's hypnotizing 5,000 people in an audience at once to make them believe that they've lost time. And to the extent where a large majority of the audience, well, the audience is arguing over how much time they lost and where and when they lost the time, as opposed to if it really happened or not. Like that type of stuff, I think for me and you is where we just melt. Where I don't know where I end and you begin.
Oh. Beautiful.
No, go ahead. No, please.
It is interesting what I've been thinking the past couple of weeks, ever since it was kind of announced, this book. It's a little bit scary, this huge, you know, tome coming out. Sometimes when someone puts out work like that, I always think, does that mean they're winding it down? Especially with the stuff to do with the new show.
I got the feeling that he's not, because I don't think he said it directly, but what I inferred from him was that like when he goes home after a tour, you know, he's sort of, he said, like, you know, you can get home and then it's 7 o'clock in the evening, and he's 2 years in a row he's been out on stage at that time. And I feel like he's somebody who needs to do that. I feel like that. I inferred from it, might be completely wrong, but I don't think he's hanging it up. I kind of get the sense that it's just like, it's almost like maybe a chapter of type of magic he wants to close off. But he has so much, such a brain, he's such a wisdom bank that hopefully he knows that he should share it with us, and he has.
Well, the more exciting option is, oh, okay, I'm done with this stuff now because I've found some better things.
Yeah. Do you know, he answered the question, and I think it's okay to answer this. He answered the question on why he doesn't use electronics in his show. And it was quite a fascinating answer. And one of the things that he sort of said was that you can run the, and of course, please, like, don't take what I'm saying as verbatim, because I have a memory like a sieve. But often when the method is too perfect, I think it was someone said to him, but like when the method was too perfect, that often that can be the only thing they take away from the effect. It's like, for example, if somebody wrote their name down on, or a word down on a pad, and then you reveal the name on the pad, then the people only care about, how did he know what I wrote down? Or how did he know how many, what was on the dice? Like when the method is so good, you can put that at the forefront of the performance. But when you have to, when you can't use those perfect methods and you have to use something much more, what's the word, analog, then you, and I'm, again, I may have taken this the wrong way, but it felt like what he was saying was that when you have to use something where, for example, you may have to condition them for something, or you may have to create reasoning to use that prop, etc., then you can form more of a performance with it. You can hide the method in the shadow of the performance. And also then, or while simultaneously, they don't, you know, they shouldn't just care about how you did the trick. Like, it's all, what Darren says is like connection first and foremost. He talked about a good piece of advice from, not advice given to him, but something that Thurston would say before he went on stage, was just, I love you, I love you, I love you to the audience, not actually to them, but, you know, and he said like connection first. If like, if they don't have a connection, then, you know, you just do magic tricks, yeah. Which is all, you know, I believe there's a time and a place for magic tricks as well. So you can't go up to a group of rugby boys and try and connect them in a pub, I think. He's not doing that, I don't believe. He's on stage doing these things. But it was really interesting to see that, because the logical magician in me only wants to fool them sometimes. You know, I forget how important story is. I mean, through doing these podcasts, you can see that I'm working on it. You're really good at it. Again, like when I think of the methods, I'm always like, oh, why don't I just do the best method? And actually, to hear that up point of view, where using a less perfect method, but then creating a better effect because of it, is fascinating.
Yeah, I think we've definitely kind of tread the line during the past 17. Well, this is episode 18, so the past couple of episodes, between thinking of cool mechanical ideas and then talking about, you know, the connective tissue and storytelling and stuff like that.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's true. The best method, sometimes I think about like a billet peak or whatever. Like, oh yeah, electronic notepad. But sometimes just we think so hard about it and they absolutely don't care. Like, or they have no recollection of which method you used. But if you focus so much on about how clean and perfect it is, and I didn't come over there, I didn't do anything, I didn't look over your shoulder, I didn't touch it, you hammer home all the points at the end of the performance, then they don't really care about the trick. They walk away and they're thinking, yeah, well, he didn't touch the pad, he didn't look over, he didn't do this. When you don't want them to be thinking about that.
Yeah, we've got this built-in like punctuation as magicians of these stock lines that we say to prove things that just, they really do cast a bit of a bad shadow over some tricks, where it'd be amazing if you just kept your mouth shut and didn't say, and I'm nowhere near the deck of cards.
Yeah, I absolutely fall victim to that, because I perform magic primarily for magicians, or at least for a long part of my career. All I did was perform to magicians at conventions all over the world and on shoots all over the world. That's all I did. So the way to impress the magicians is, because, you know, is just to fool them, essentially. Yeah. So I sort of have that ingrained in me from there, but I'm trying my best. But it was nice to hear that. It was good to hear. It was brain food. And then I'm trying to think, what was the other thing that... There was so much interesting stuff. I'm trying to think, anything you want to ask potentially?
Yeah, I'm just very, very jealous that it didn't end up going.
Well, it was good, but I'm pretty sure like it was all talk about the book and not about like other stuff that like pretty much everything that was spoken about on stage you will get from the book.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay.
But the one thing that one thing that he talked about, which made my soul leap, it was just about I've spoken about this before. I'm not sure if I've been on here, but definitely on the Magic podcast that I co-host. I struggle beyond belief to watch magicians perform, or the majority of magicians perform. That's why when we had Adam Dadswell on here, I said, Adam, I did say it on you. Yeah. I struggle so much to watch other magicians perform. It's so cringeworthy. I want to crawl up and curl into a ball. And Darren said he's exactly the same. Like he just struggles to watch so much magic because it just makes his skin crawl. And I thought, oh, I'm glad I'm not the only one.
No, I think it's pretty common, isn't it? It is sad as well, though, because a lot of people are wanting actively to show you things, or I don't know. Sometimes it can get awkward for everyone, I think.
Not so much magicians performing to me, but watching other magicians perform like on video and things, I just think, oh no, like stop.
You know, I hate performing for magicians when I really, really should get a lot better at it. But there's a very simple reason, and you've already touched on it. It's like anything that I do is just base level simplicity, as purely simple as I can get it, and it's never ever going to impress a magician. No, nothing that I do will ever impress a magician. I'm only interested in the layman sitting across the table from me.
It's tricky, right? But without me being so bold, I would imagine if you hadn't met me but you'd seen my channel, right, so you could see that I'm into like gimmicks and visual trickery, then you would assume that if you showed me like some of your creations, right? If you'd show me one of your creations, I would safely assume that you would think I wouldn't be impressed. So therefore, you probably would half-ass the performance or just tell me the method. Like a lot of magicians go, oh, well, it just works like this. But now you know me, you know that what really gets my juices complete, like what gets me like a firework these days is when you say something like, oh, the hand of glory and what it means. And I'm like literally sending you WhatsApp screaming. So knowing that now, if you knew the other magician you were performing to was someone like me, maybe you'd be excited to be like, oh, actually, I think he's going to love this because this presentational hook or this idea is the part that I'm hoping he's going to like. And if he's anything like Lloyd, they're going to go crazy.
Maybe. Yeah. But I think if it's the presentational hook or anything like that I'm excited about them knowing, then it would usually just be brought up in conversation. Because the thing that I'm excited about with the actual effect itself is always this one-on-one connection. Yeah. And I'm never going to get that with a magician. Well, actually, you know what? Maybe I would. Maybe I would. It has to be the right thing. I think I went out my way to fool you when I first started talking to you with a coin in bottle because I assumed that was your avenue.
Yeah, and if you only knew now what you know, I just wanted some weepy script and I'd be done. I'd be in the palm of your hand.
Yeah. Just so I don't forget, because it's only just came through. Someone commented on the Black Art podcast group, and if I don't read it now, I will definitely forget and I won't read it at the end. Sorry. So it's a little bit early in the podcast, but George Thompson just commented saying, "Hi, Jake. Listening in the States. Love the podcast. In the beginning of episode 17, Lloyd mentions two books. I believe The Psychology of Magic and What Sounds Like the Jerks. What are these books and any suggestions on books about the psychology of magic and mentalism? Thanks so much for the podcast. I look forward to each one. You guys are the best." Thank you, George. I definitely would have forgot to mention that.
We always have a tendency to forget questions, but we're getting better. Point in case. Yes, so the psychology of magic is, I'm just going to, if you hold court, I'll roll to the other side of the room and grab the book right now.
You roll away, boy. What Lloyd was talking about with the jakes, it wasn't, I don't believe he was talking about a book. He was talking about www.thejerx.com. which is a blog. It's a magic blog. There's a lot of cool stuff on there.
Yes. So Jake's right. The Jerks is a blog, thejerks.com with an X. And he's an anonymous blog writer that has, he's a self-professed sort of hobbyist magician, amateur magician, but he comes up with some incredible theories, presentations, methods, all for magic. He actually has written some books, and I think the first one definitely won Book of the Year, is voted for by like the whole magic community. There's some massive names involved in the blog itself, but The Jerks is essentially anonymous. Although I do hear who it is, you know, like quite often. I mean, lots of people say, but anyway. But it's fascinating if you're interested in like unique presentations on stuff on magic. I have very unique presentations. This is not your average ambitious card routine type of guy. This is like really, really good presentations. Then
he posted one of my favorite uses for DFB as well, if you're into anything like that.
Ooh, what was it?
It was instead of them guessing, no, instead of them saying the number and, you know, you're forcing something, it was essentially you had a list of 99 names. They weren't all full. And what it was you were acting as if you knew them that well, that you knew what number they were going to pick. So you're writing their name into your notes app and then asking them. But there's a whole presentation around about being at the top of a spiral staircase, and you're taking steps down and try and imagine in your head, you know, how many steps does it take you to get down? It can be anywhere between 1 and 99.
I remember the steps thing.
It was really cool.
Very clever. There's two presentations that I love from other people to do with DFB. One was shared in the Facebook group, I believe, and it uses like the off by 12 thing. So you get the, they say like a number, like say it's 24 to keep it simple, and the object is a spoon, and then you reveal that the reveal says you'll be off, but you know it was off by 12. So it was actually, you know, but I won't delve into it. And the other one is I think it was Madison Hagler posted using like the combination of, you know, the Mark Ellison thing called a Roborus, I think it is. It's an amazing thing. I'm reluctant to, like, I don't want to expose anyone's stuff, but yeah. The effect would be this. I would have you select a card and it would vanish from the deck. And then I would say, in my notes, I have, for example, 52 things, 52 places. Name a number, or 100 even. You say like number 24. And then I say number 24, read out loud, and it says in your pocket. And I read into my pocket and the card was there, and they could have chosen anything. Right? Do you know what I mean? But it seems it adds an element of possibility. Anyway, fantastic. Yeah, go and check out thejerks.com. The book called The Psychology of Magic, and this is why why The Jerks and The Psychology of Magic was joined in that conversation. This was a book written by Alice, how would you pronounce that? Payers and Gustav Kuhn. And they have the world's first official proper magic lab. It's a research facility. And they test out magic theories. They write theses on all things magic. And things like they test out the crosscut force, or they'll take like, you know, 10 ways of force in a playing card, or even just having someone select a playing card. So, you know, to create like a baseline and stuff, or whatever it's called, a control. So from one of the things in here, because there's so much in here, but one of the things in there that they did was they had people pick a card from a spread face down. They had people like, so, and they do it like scientifically. So they had like 100 people do it one way. And then the next group would pick a card face up. The next group would cut to a card. The next group would deal down to a card. Another group would just think of a card that they could see. Another group would think of a card that would, or would just name a card out loud. And from those participants, then they would ask them to review the process and ask them how fair did it feel. And there's some incredible anomalous results that appear within certain things. One of which being, in this example, that people felt like, for, if I was to ask you as a magician, Jake,
yeah,
what's the fairest way for you to have a card chosen, the way which you think would feel to an audience, okay, I have the most control of that decision? As a magician, what would you go for?
From traditional options or something?
From the ones I just named. Would it be to name a card completely?
Yeah,
freely?
I think so. I think.
Would it be to look at a card, to select one face up? That'd be fairer. You'd say name it, right? And that's what I would say too. But the research shows that the fairest way that people found, the way that they really thought they had the most control, was from a face down spread. And pieces of information like that are worth their weight in gold, I believe, because we spend so much time saying, well, I want to do, for example, a card to pocket where they just think of a card and it ends up in my pocket.
Yeah.
And that gives you, that puts certain parameters and restrictions on the routine that you can do. But ultimately, with science-based evidence to back it up, you're trying to make the trick more impossible to like magicians, yeah, where in actuality the audience feel like they were tricked more if you could accomplish it that way, as opposed to like then just selecting cards. There was other, and there's so much in here, but like another interesting one, just to give you an example of what the book is about, is that they did Max Maven's The Wave, where there's four queens. One of them is turned upside down. You say to the audience, name one. And it's the Queen of Spades, for example. You spread, and the Queen of Spades is the one. It's a 1 in 4 chance, right? And then they did an invisible deck, which is 1 in 52 chance. And then they did a 1 in 1,000 chance. And I can't remember what they did, what the method. I think maybe it was like a thumb writer or something.
Right.
And surprising, well, I mean, you would imagine that the 1 in 1,000 chance would get the better result, or at least the invisible deck. But actually, they were all perceived to be almost identically impossible. 1 in 4 was perceived to be as impossible or as impressive as 1 in 1,000, an invisible deck. And this is something me and Relish were talking about quite a lot in the car was, we spend so much time trying to amp up the impossibility. And when science-based evidence can, like, I always remember seeing ESP cards being used for an effect years ago. It was an effect on TV. It was 5 ESP cards were placed into a frame by an audience member. The frame was turned around and they matched the 5 ESP cards that had been put in place by the magician. I've never forgotten that trick. I didn't know how it worked at the time, but I've forgotten tens of thousands of card tricks. I really thought that what they did was real, and it was and that was just using 5 cards. But if it was, where I'd seen tricks like every card is separated reds into blacks, not as memorable.
No.
So reading up on bits of pieces like this gives you like a lot of new perspective, and it helps you create better magic, more maybe not better to magicians, but to the people who it matters to.
Yeah.
Better magic to them. And then the thing that we were discussing, right, was they, that one from, I think it was from The Jerks, they tested a color change that happened visually in multiple different methods versus a color change that happened invisibly, so like a double lift. And the one where you couldn't see the visual nature of the effect was more powerful. And, you know, and then we discussed the reasoning on it. So yes, that's the book, Psychology of Magic. A lot of book discussion today.
Thank you for the question though, George Thompson. And you said some very lovely things about the podcast, which is great for our egos.
It is great for our egos. My swollen ego.
But that was just a complete aside from the whole conversation we were actually having. And I do have maybe a left of field question. I'm not sure. A thought experiment.
Ooh. A jam.
So Derren Brown is doing, it seems to be a Derren Brown focused episode at the moment now. Derren Brown is doing a show where he's not involved in a performative sense. He's directing it and he wrote it. But say in like 2 or 3 years, it's a big, big solo comeback stage show. And if he came to you tomorrow and said, I need help writing it, and I want it to be completely different to anything I've ever performed before, I want to bring you into the team, because he's very good at picking his team. What would be your first thought? Like, what are you thinking? You know, if he wanted it to be completely different to all the other stuff, but still be recognizably Derren Brown, What kind of angle would you go for? Stage show, not TV
show. I'm asking that same question back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you go?
So because he's covered such a lot of ground, having the TV specials as well as the stage shows, it is hard. It's a hard question. That's why I was thinking about it, because it's a tough one. And I mean, he's obviously, in earlier years, Darren Brown was more of a magician. His published effects that are pretty much just magic tricks and not really to do with mentalism. I can't imagine him doing anything where it was just going straight back to magic, though. So it's hard to come up with some kind of a gimmick or some kind of an angle or some kind of a story. And if you're staying away from the stuff that is traditionally Darren, then it's hard to base a show around something, because he did used to like to base a show around a prop or a piece of folklore or
Ooh, well,
also no confabulations.
He did talk about something which is right up your street, and I remember to put a little post-it pin in it, which was, he said, to give objects meaning so that you can call back to them later, but not just saying that your dead grandfather gave it to you,
yeah,
but to give it an emotional story or a hook to it that you could pull back into your show at any moment and it still not be forgotten. But I think that's in the book. I just want to remember to say that to you, because he said that and I was like, ah, jig. Now, the first thing that came to my mind was Darren normally does stuff, like when it comes to the TV, that it used to be very controversial. But now it's a lot more about empowering people and connecting with people. And I wonder if there's a way to do both. Obviously there is, but the way that came to my mind, and this is probably going to be flagged for even saying it, but if you were to do, this is actually mental, so please don't judge me. But if he was to do some form of assisted suicide on stage, where somebody who was terminally ill and wanted to go out in the best way possible, someone who is totally like, look, I don't want to go to a room in Switzerland on my own without my family. And then the show would be based around whether to go through with it or not, and using the audience, and in some way all centered around one person who wanted to go out on their own terms in some form. Because I suppose in a way it's the ultimate empowering experience. It's the ultimate experience of connection, but it's also incredibly controversial.
Yeah, you've got to be careful what you say on YouTube, because I think they hunt for certain words.
I know. But like, for example, say I was terminally ill, I think 100% I would be down for doing something like that. 100%. Why not? You're not going to, you know what I mean?
I mean,
I would.
Yeah. Is this for a TV show?
I don't know. No, I'm thinking live audience.
Because it'd be a very short tour.
Yeah. Well, I'll do it in a stadium.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'll do it in a Coliseum.
Oh, I can imagine the opening monologue as well.
Yeah. I know it sounds mental, right? And the beauty of the Blackout podcast is that we can cast out massive nets and then rein it back into something a lot more, you know, we could just kill a gerbil.
Yeah, it's the Pipe Dream podcast.
Yeah, the Pipe Dream podcast. Much better name, man. I don't know. What do you think about that realm of idea?
I think you're fucked up, bro. I think it's interesting. I think it's not out of the realms of possibility. There have been TV shows that have shown that and followed someone for their journey.
Terry Pratchett did it for a TV show.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Terry Pratchett.
I know, right? So it's like, it's not even like it hasn't even been done by somebody famous as the person on the chair. But I was trying to think of a combination of every element that sort of, that he's touched on. Russian roulette is an element of death. The push or the jump. What's it called? The push, the fall, the jump? Wait, push. Somebody pushes someone off a building. The heist. Hero, you know, but obviously it's a new era. It's like, they say they're showing less nudity in films, but more creative ways to kill people, right? Yeah. They're more afraid of a nipple than they are of seeing someone's head being smashed in with a fire extinguisher in that weird Russian film. I don't know. but you know, it's I guess it's controversial sometimes. It's just being the first to do it.
Yeah, no, that's true. Unless it is actually just a really bad idea, and then it's still controversial.
It could just be an absolutely terrible idea. The other thing that came to my mind is like with he's all about connecting with the audience, is doing something, but I think that it was the lazy thought of just like somehow everyone connecting through their social medias at once. And so instead of doing what I loved, like I love it when people do things like Bandersnatch. Yeah. You know, and there was also like the Chris Rock live streaming global event, the first thing that happened. I would love to see him do something in that way. It would be incredible to do a live global, everyone interacting with a Darren Brown show. Because if he's all, you know, he's all about interaction. Wouldn't it be amazing to sit there at home and be able to watch a live Darren Brown experience, but also interact with the show? And I know there'd be billions or millions of people watching if it was on Netflix. But a way that you could actually, that all the numbers of, or every combination of number in the world is hidden within the result of pi.
Yeah.
Down to the infinite number. Well, if everyone was viewing was assigned a ticket number and that eventually ended up somewhere and you could go and check and verify that you were part of the show and the decisions you made did affect the outcome of the show in one way or another, you know, like in some tangible ways that weren't just everyone gets to choose left or right for a ball bearing that goes in a hole, and when it finishes as a giant mosaic that makes a huge image, and you can say, well, I chose, you know, something a bit more.
That is fun, actually. If during the whole process there are certain parts where, you know, an effect does involve choosing A, B, C, or D, and so it's not just the fact that that might be influencing the effect, it's also it's the scripting for afterwards. It's, you know, talking about psychology.
Wouldn't it be cool if like you're watching a live show with him, he's like, everyone at home, if you're watching right now, you have to make a decision. We have three envelopes, four envelopes on stage. They have this person at the live audience's wedding ring inside it, or whatever it's going to be, £1,000. But everyone at home, you have to choose A, B, C, or D. If you get it wrong, you will be kicked out of the show. And you press it and the show ends. And they get taken to another screen. Sorry, you didn't make it through to tonight's show. You can't see the finale of the show tonight, but you can come back in a week. And I don't know, something like that where the consequence obviously isn't real life-altering, but it does have an effect.
Yeah. There's a ton of material to mine there to do with stuff with like, you know, the wisdom of crowds and things like that.
Yeah.
The one thing that he mentions in like 80% of his live shows is the whole the box thing, you know, that your chance, I can't even remember the theorem behind it or anything, you know, your chance increases if there's three boxes, you pick one.
Monty Hall principle.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Yes.
You know, if it was like a ratio wise, like of how many, like what the majority of people chose for the boxes and stuff, and I can imagine him doing some stuff with that.
Ooh, what if there was like geocaches all over, like for example, if he did it in the UK, so a Channel 4 live show, he's placed 1,000 objects in different places around the country, legitimately, and I don't know, I'm just like brain farting out loud, but. You know, from the moment he says, maybe he puts on screen a reel that shows the location of all 1,000 objects, like a, you know, one of those quick 1,000 frames, so they can try and pause the live TV because, you know, it's live TV or whatever, or they can scan a QR code. It'll come up to the closest one in their location. But from the second the QR code is scanned on screen, you're timed and wherever they go, wherever they pick it up, it'll automatically put a, there's a stopwatch running on these things, right? Digital stopwatch. So from the moment it screens on it, maybe it's a phone. It's a phone. That's easy. Keep it easy, right? There's a phone hidden, 1,000 phones hidden across the UK, all connected to the internet. The second that QR code is shown, a timer begins on every single phone. Once everyone has to run and get the phones and press stop, and they can verify, well, they know they've stopped the timer themselves. And then every number is sent in automatically to the screen. At home, everyone can see every single geocached number on the screen, and they can, so that every single person involved in the experiment can verify for certain which one's theirs, right? Because it'll maybe put on a map. And then somehow, when the numbers are on screen, it can make like a giant image, and it could already have worked out that way, or the prediction was written on the side of the Severn Bridge, the exact number sequence of everyone who would find every single thing. If you don't believe it, you can get in your car and travel and go and see that that was there before it ever began, and you can absolutely verify that your exact time code is exactly where it is. In you know, maybe it's like A B C D E F G, or for every single town, and you'd be like, holy crap, my actual time, and I could watch the seconds myself. You know, I don't know, something like that.
No, there's some really cool ideas there. Like, I love the idea of this bigger multimedia kind of event.
Mm-hmm. He's always been the first to like push the boundaries on a lot of stuff. So,
And he did do the events, right? That was the series.
Yeah, the events. Yeah, he did the trick or treat thing, but I don't know. Yeah, some stuff. Anything getting your brain going?
It's hard to get my brain going at the moment because of how little sleep I've had, but. I think Netflix would go for that as well, you know.
Yeah, if you could come up with a show like that, dude, I feel like, you know, if that happens, just remember, like, Black Art Podcast, Jake and Lloyd.
Logistically, an absolute nightmare. 100% guaranteed to mess up somehow.
But just have fail safes for everything.
Or it'll be like the. I think he's done it once before, or maybe it was something else, where it was never live in the first place. And he was like, haha, this was pre-recorded 2 months ago.
Oh, that's kind of cool. That's pretty cool. Although it would be great if like the ending of the recording was him somewhere really public, so that everyone, like on top of Big Ben or something like that. So when it cuts to him, there's at least like 1,000 people not in on it. I like it. Yeah. No, like he's totally there.
Yeah. I think even with his last show, the last live show, people started to see a bit of a shift in some of his material. And it is exciting. It was different. It was very different to some of his older stuff.
The Showman Tour was phenomenal. Because it felt my favorite show of his was Something Wicked This Way Comes, because it scratched that magician itch in me. And then a lot of the other tours were just purely to entertain the audience, which is the correct thing to do, don't get me wrong. But the Showman Tour definitely had that element of like the card to box, like you just know that he knew that he was going to get a lot of happy magicians watching that.
Yeah.
You know, and it was particularly brilliant for that reason. But look, we're almost over time.
Oh no.
I know. Should we talk about a little idea that we were messaging back and forth about today?
Yes, we should talk about that. I'm so sorry. I've been so like lackadaisical and just out of it this episode.
Oh dude, no, I feel bad because I've got so much to talk about today. I feel like I'm just drowning you out and I'm being
no,
very
please
rude.
Drown me out. Drown me.
Well, it's just like I said to Jake, I had an idea for a cool trick. I have no idea if it's been done before or not. I'm not a mentalist. So, but I said, wouldn't it be great if you, so this is the effect, right? So Jake, I walk up to you. Hey man, how's it going? What newspaper do you read?
The Liverpool Echo.
The Liverpool Echo. Okay, cool. Well, in Wales, we have the Glamorgan Gazette. I don't know if you've read it today, but I've torn out the crossword from today's Gazette. And in it, there's about like 20, 30 clues to the crossword. So you would see like three across would be something that rivers and money have in common. And the word across would be banks. And then something that a torso and a chair has in common. For say number one down would be armchair, I don't know, something like that, arms race, I don't know, for guns. But you could see that there's basically what I'm saying is that like the A in arms would cross on banks if we were to point it out on this crossroads. So just imagine you can see that, right? So I'd say to you, Jake, what I want you to do is find any clue across and try to figure out, find one that you can work out on your own. And then wherever it's crossed going down, find the correct clue and work that out if you can. So hopefully you do that. Don't tell me anything about it. And then from there, I would, perfect, right? So now I'd say, just like in the first one with the letter A for in arms and banks being the crossover letter, I'm assuming if you've got it right, there's a letter that crosses over, which to you will confirm the answer's right. Yeah?
Yeah.
And at this point, I would be able to reveal the letter, and then I could go off into either the two words, like a door or a drawing duplication. But the cool thing is, I would like it as well if the words were also related to each other, the two words just by chance, and then I can have a grander reveal, which maybe could have been sat out in the open from the very beginning.
Yeah,
that combines up is a combination of those two words. And also, it would be great if potentially that was the like all the words like that or not. So that was just like a premise I sent to you. It must have been done before, or I know like crossword magic has been done before, right? I think there's probably got like some crossword book test or something. But that premise of the crossover letter, and the whole thing that I said to you was basically the clues would be really easy, apart from one or two red herrings, which you would be the examples you call out, so that you're guaranteed to read it. And then the way that you know what they're thinking is that, say there's 10 words, 10, say there's 20 clues in total, 10 across, 10 down, that the 10 words going down would all have a different amount of letters in them. So basically, let's say a 3-letter word up to a 13-letter word. So all you could say casually in the middle of the performance is, go ahead and find the corresponding down clue and see if you can figure it out. I don't want to know anything about it. Out of curiosity, how many letters are you trying to work out on this one, Jake? And then you'd say five or six. And then by you telling me that, it could instantly cue me, okay, I just need to know what the sixth letter in my crib is, you know? But to them, if there was the same amount of letters, like say there's like 3 to 13 on the across clues, that can be, you can throw them off because you can say, look, it doesn't even matter if I know how many letters because there's multiple ones with the same amount of letters, but you just don't say it's the across ones. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think what excited me about it is how we're always trying to get that one bit piece of information that, because they don't know we have that one piece of information, you can do stuff with it.
Yeah.
So because you know that the crossover letter is a B, you can force something with that.
Yeah. I just had a wicked idea. Dude. Oh my Lord. What if before the trick begins, they pick a word at random, air quotes to all the streaming services. But the word, say, for example, is 10 letters. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Not sure yet.
So we do it. I reveal your word, the crossword letter. Then we fill in the rest of the crossword between us. Turns out it was pretty easy. And I say, look, the interesting thing, there are 10 letters that cross over in this crossword. And you were thinking of a 10-letter word. And those 10 letters that cross over exactly spell the word that you were thinking of right from the very beginning.
Interesting.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. And so would they be actually choosing this word at random, or would it be...
Digital force bag, that thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what I was... Go on.
What if you find 10 letter words that are all made up of the same letters? So they get an incredibly fair choice of, like you said, yeah. Like here's a list of a bunch of words. The list could just be a repeating list. So it looks like there's hundreds of words, but you just think of any word off that list as quick as you can. Perfect. Or as many words with the same 10 letters in them. There are. And then you just, as you say, like, let's write, what was the word you were thinking of? A completely fair choice. And then when you go back later on, you show a different list, so it cleans it up.
Yeah. We need to do some research on anagramsolver.net.
Yeah, do my favorite website of all time.
It's such a good idea, though. I love there being more to it, but I also love it as a utility to force a letter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go ahead, pick up any part of the crossword, whatever the crossword letter is. That's the letter we're going to use for the next part of the effect.
Yeah, or not even necessarily force. Just getting that tiny little piece of information that they're like, there's no way he knows that I'm thinking of the letter F.
Yeah.
We've made it random by picking two completely separate clues and I'm picking an overlapping letter and he doesn't know I'm thinking of the letter F.
Dude.
Lay it on.
The way to force the word from the beginning could be from 10 more clues. Mm. So the answer is one of the 10 forced words as well. The answer to all of them, they say, look, if you can't figure out, maybe you could Google it. Like, I don't know what the answers are.
Yeah.
So then it feels even more fit.
It's interesting. Very, very interesting. It's exciting.
But yeah, that's what me and Jake were WhatsApping about today. So I don't know if any of you guys want to take a stab at your own version of it and then send it into the podcast next week. Maybe you have it all worked out for us already, or you just want have some extra bonus ideas to add to it. Let us know, drop us a line, drop us an email, drop us a message on the Facebook group. By the way, I have a Facebook now, but it's purely, so I spent, I've deleted 4,000 magicians from my old Facebook profile. So it's just people in my local area. I found out that I missed out on so many like events and stuff because my kid and family stuff and things. So I have a Facebook, but it's only for friends and family, but it means I can see the podcast group.
If I let you in.
Please let me in. Oh man, please let me in. I'm beholden to you now.
Because people in there like to talk about you.
That's okay. What other people's opinion of me is.
We all just chat shit about you, dude.
That's sad, isn't it?
No, not really. Kaylee's in there, so we're not allowed to.
I've actually checked out the group with Kaylee a few times, or on her profile a few times. She let me check it out.
It's fun though. It's fun. I'm hoping that it gets a little bit more active. If you're listening to this, please do join it.
Yeah. What's the way to find it?
It's literally just called the Black Art Podcast. It's a group on Facebook, or you can go to theblackartco.com. There's a link on there.
Sweet. Well, I'm about to play the rollout animation, but theblackartco.com. Go and give us a follow. If you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe button. Drop us a like if you're watching this on YouTube so that the algorithm knows you're engaged. If you've made it all the way through to the end of the video, what's the magic phrase they need to leave in the comment section?
Yeah, as soon as you ask me this, my mind always just goes completely blank.
All about brown.
All about brown.
All about brown. That's the comment. All right, well, on that note, folks, you're about to hear the rollout, the outro. I don't know what it's called. Here we go. I've been Lloyd.
I've been Jake.
See you guys in the next episode.
Peace.